Welcome to Off the Grid Radio. Better ideas to bust you and your family out of today's global control grid. Now, here's today's show.
Hi, welcome to another edition of Off the Grid Radio. I'm Michael Faust of offthegridnews.com. Today's guest is J. David Cox, who with his wife Sally moved from the city to an off-grid life in the wilds of British Columbia. And as they'll tell you, or as David will tell you, they had no skills and only limited knowledge of what to do. But more than a decade later, they are off-grid veterans. And David has written two books about his about their ventures. One is called Choosing Off the Grid, and the other is called Our Life Off the Grid. But first, let me tell you about today's sponsor. Today's sponsor is MySolarBackup.com. The power grid is aging, and blackouts are becoming far more frequent. And if you watch the news, it seems like threats to the power grid becoming more and more significant each day. The solution, though, is quite simple. Believe it or not, you can get free electricity that will work even when your neighbor's power is out. While they're grabbing their flashlights, your lights, they'll be still be on. You can learn more at mysolarbackup.com, or you can call 877-327-0365. David, we have you on the phone all the way from British Columbia. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks, Mike. Nice to be here.
We want to get to what's covered in your books in a second here, and I'm sure some of that is what you're going to tell us. But just give us your background, David, because you have an incredible story. What caused you? Let me backtrack here. Tell us what your life was like before moving off the grid, and why you wanted to make the transition to something else.
Well, Mike, unfortunately, this is a long story, but I'll make it as quick as I can.
Okay.
We lived in a cul-de-sac. My kids went to school. They hung out at the mall. I had three cars, actually. Four telephone lines, four televisions. We were deep, deep, deep enmeshed and immersed in the rat race. And that's okay. It was okay. I mean, I was not happy, but I wasn't unhappy. I just had a general malaise about it all. And we eventually paid off the house, and so I took the kids on a trip. I took my wife and the kids on a cross-country Canadian trip and went to Europe for a couple of months and then crossed the United States to show them that there was more to life than a shopping mall.
Yeah.
But before we left, my wife turned to me and she said, "We have to leave some money for the house." And I said, "Well, no, we don't. We just paid the house off." And she said, no, you're misunderstanding. We still have to keep the phone line and the cable and this and the lawn and the window cleaner and yada, yada." It went on. And finally, she settled out at $1,700 a month not to live in my house.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there thinking, I have to make $2,500 a month before taxes not to live in my house. And that was insane. And from that moment on, I kept thinking, I have to get away from this. This is a crazy system. And when we came back, even though the kids plugged into school and my wife went back to work, my heart just was not in it anymore. I just simply could not run with the rats as efficiently as I had been.
And so I'm just curious, were you living in Canada at the time, or are you living in the U.S.?
Oh, we're living in Canada. I've lived in the U.S., okay. Which I believe, by the way, has committed more to the rat race than we have.
Yeah.
But we've committed too much for me to be happy, and so we left.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you just said about that. So that was kind of the point at which you decided you don't want to do it anymore. But at what point did you decide to move off the grid? And, you know, once you did that, you had to figure out, okay, how do I build it, you know? Tell us that story.
Well, you're quite right. Once I was unhappy and dissatisfied to the point that I had to do something about it, I really didn't know what to do about it. And so I probably spent the next two or three years kind of throwing myself around mentally. What would I do? Where would I go? Why would I do that? And I'd spent a lot of time sailing, and I was thinking of maybe going sailing. But, you know, it's one of those things, been there, done that. And Well, I actually owned a piece of property up the coast that I'd purchased at the back of the land movement back in the 70s. And I decided I'd go visit it. It wasn't a big deal. It was just a small piece. But when I went to it, I went, oh, my God, this is fantastic. I have to move here. So it took me about 3 years to actually rediscover a little piece of property I bought mostly as a hippie. Mm-hmm. And once that transition happened in my head, it started to happen in my life. I started salvaging building materials and learning how to build things and design things and learned all about solar power and on and on and on. I probably did a 3-year self-education process.
And so you started doing that, and what were your friends and family members saying at this time, and when you were thinking about doing what seems so, what we would call un-American and even un-Canadian?
Well, to be honest, most of them thought it was mildly amusing and typically eccentric of me. I'm not that eccentric, I don't think, but they thought I was because I'd always worked for myself. I was an arbitrator and a mediator, and I would just contract my services. I'd never really worked for others. And so in that sense, I was always a little bit different. Hmm. But this was just an extension of me being a little bit different to my friends. And they just watched with mild amusement. But eventually I got boring because I kept talking about solar panels and instead of the hockey team or whatever.
And so once you decided to do it, you did everything from scratch and you taught yourself. Is that right?
That's mostly right. It's 95% true. I didn't think that I had to be any good at this. I really thought I could hire some local guy to build me a log cabin. But after investigating and learning, that's not true. You can't get good help to go build remote. I mean, who wants to leave their family? Who wants to go camping in a tent? Who wants to live in the rain eating, soggy bread? It's not for a guy who thinks he's a professional carpenter, and it's not even for a guy who thinks he's a handyman. It's only for the guy who cares about the site itself. And so I realized I was forced to kind of do it myself, and so I went out to learn that too.
And how did you teach yourself? Give us some. We should probably backtrack here and say you were 56 when this happened. Your wife was 52. Your wife was 52. And so I'm just asking just really basic off-grid 101 questions. Did you watch YouTube videos? Did you buy a book? What did you do? Did you have friends teach you?
Well, I'm embarrassed to tell you that I thought that the Sunset series of do-it-yourself carpentry was sufficient. And so I got a dozen or so books from Sunset or whatever they're called. These kind of almost magazines, and looked at drawings of 2x4s and 2x6s being nailed to one another and assumed, how hard can it be? I can do that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I started to do it that it became way more difficult. But at the time, I was comforted by the fact that I can read. And they even give you a list of tools to buy. So I went to Home Depot and bought the tools. I mean, it didn't seem hard at that somewhat shallow, ignorant perspective. It wasn't as daunting until I did it.
How long did it take you to do it? How long did it take you to build?
Well, that's embarrassing, too. We started, because our site is very severe, it's a 30-degree granite slope with big rocks on it. And so the very first thing we had to do was build a place to stand level. And that meant pouring cement and all that. And of course we came by way of a small boat, and you can imagine bags of cement in a small boat in the rain become giant bricks. So you had to build something as quickly as you possibly could, and building a 12 by 20 foot deck was probably the most bracing realization I could have given myself. Mm-hmm. It was incredibly difficult, and it took me 2 weeks. And when I was done, I phoned a contractor friend, and I said, I built this deck, and how long do you think it took? And he said, 2 days? And I said, no, 2 weeks. And he just fell laughing. So we really had an uphill learning curve. We really did.
Of course, you deal more about this in your books, Choosing Off the Grid and Our Life Off the Grid. Give us a sense of you know, your off-grid surroundings. I mean, you're obviously more off-grid than a city person, but how far do you have to go to the nearest big city, to the nearest gas station, to the nearest grocery store, things like that?
Well, it's not really so much the distance, because when you're on an island, it's really time to cover small distance.
Sure.
And our small island has no roads, has no stores, has no amenities whatsoever. And so you pretty much have to build your own support systems, not only for power, but for food production and water and everything. But if I do go to the city, which, by the way, I do, I go at least once a month, and we buy. I mean, I like to think we're off the grid and hardy, but we're not. We rely entirely on store-bought food when it comes to anything comforting and tasty. That's not right. We make a lot of stuff that's very tasty, mm-hmm. and we have lots of seafood, which is really great. But I mean to say that if you want any kind of modern variety in your diet, you're pretty much reliant on going to the stores. At least we are. Mm-hmm. And it would take me 2 hours to go by small boat, logging road, onto another island, and then down that island to a small ferry over to a small town. And it would take me 3 to 4 hours to go to a big box store.
Wow. Do you ever miss that life? I mean, do you ever have any thoughts of going back?
No, Mike. I have to say, after probably 2 years, it hit me like a fish in the face. I will never go back.
And how long have you been living there, David?
15 years.
David, let's take a quick break. We need to take a quick break. When we return, we'll continue our conversations with David Cox. He's the author of a couple of books that you might want to check out, Choosing Off the Grid and Our Life Off the Grid. We'll be right back.
Have you ever wanted to generate your own supply of electrical power? If so, this is going to be the most important message you will ever hear. Solar power generators are now available from Solutions from Science in Thompson, Illinois. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity for free. It's like having an electric power plant running quietly in your own home. Run sump pumps, shortwave radios, computers, and even keep food from spoiling. Whether it's hurricanes, ice storms, brownouts, or blackouts, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. When the power goes out, you'll be ready. With a solar-powered generator from Solutions from Science, go to mysolarbackup.com and get off the grid today. That's mysolarbackup.com or call 877-327-0365. 877-327-0365. Don't wait. Call today.
Off the Grid News, because you want a different paradigm.
David, let's turn to a couple of topics that I think will be of interest to our audience. Number one, how do you make it work financially? Because, you know, I think a lot of people want to escape the rat race, but they don't know what to do once they get to the other side. I mean, how are they going to make it work? So what do you think about that?
Well, Mike, it's an interesting leap of faith that's required at the very start, no question. But your faith is somewhat strengthened after a fairly short period of time, because what you learn is that it doesn't cost as much when you live out here as it does in the city. Let me give you a quick example. My wife and I earned $150,000 a year when we lived in the cul-de-sac together. But at the end of the year, I had to borrow money to pay my taxes. Now, bear in mind, I was putting two kids through school, blah, blah, blah. But still, $150,000 15 years ago was a good middle-class wage. And it wasn't enough to buy new cars or go on vacations. And I had to borrow money to pay taxes. Now, out here, I live on about $36,000, and I save money.
Wow. Wow.
Now, the reason for that is I'm not paying parking. I'm not going lunch meetings. I'm not doing Starbucks. I don't have four telephone lines. I don't have four television sets. I don't have cable vision. I don't drive my car. I drive my car less than 200 kilometers a month, or in your parlance, 120 miles.
Sure.
Or maybe something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that would be a fairly busy month. Yes, I run a boat, but it just doesn't seem to add up that much. I don't have hydro bills. I don't have all those umbilical costs that the city person does. Now, to be fair, I also don't have insurance. So if my house burns down, I'm in trouble. But by and large, that previous conversation we had where I had to leave $2,500 a month for the house not to live there, I don't have that problem anymore.
Hmm. You also have some interesting thoughts, David, about the role of money. You were telling me during the break that somebody, a friend of yours, was going to borrow something from you, and he was going to give you some money. If you will, relay that story and the significance of it for an off-grid life.
Well, what happens when you live off the grid is that money doesn't mean as much. It doesn't cross your mind as often. There's no place to spend it. You don't have to walk around with your wallet. I only go to town once a month, so for 30 days of the month, I have no money on my person. Hmm. And that is totally foreign from my previous way of life. My neighbor came by and borrowed 10 lag screws, and when he took them, he wanted to give me $20. And I said, that won't do the job, just replace the lag screws. And he said, well, I'd rather just give you the 20 and finish it. And I said, well, that's the problem. If I take the 20, I can buy the lag screws, but then I have to spend $100 or more just to get to town to get them. So don't worry about the timing. Just go get the replacements when it's convenient for you. And that kind of transaction is typical out here, that if somebody does something for you or you do something for somebody, it's not compensated for by money. It's compensated for by in-kind or something else. And sometimes it's not compensated for at all. It's just part of the community. Mm-hmm. Money plays no role out here. And the further you go, the less of a role it plays. Now, don't let me mislead you, Mike. Of course it plays a role. Once a month, I go to town, and that's when money reasserts itself as the medium of exchange. Every once in a while, I have to buy tires for my truck or something like that. And once again, money reasserts itself. But the lifestyle out here has no real role for money.
What do you like most about what you about your life? Is it partially the absence of the junk, the rat race, or is it also the benefits of everything else?
Well, I don't think I would have phrased it like that, but yeah, it is the absence of junk, the craziness, the harassment, the rules, the, you know, lining up, traffic, getting on a phone tree and waiting while music plays in the background, waiting for the elevator. The whole nonsense. When I look back on the time I spent wasting my life in lineups and such like that, I wonder why I even did it. It's mm-hmm. just the craziest thing. Mm-hmm. But if, on a more positive note, this is a beautiful, healthy place. We have humpback whales rolling by 50 feet from our house.
Wow.
We have great sea lions blowing and snorting as they go by. We have wolves howling in the background. This is a beautiful, beautiful place to be, and it's somehow much more therapeutic than I ever thought it could be. You're just a happier person.
I was going to ask you about wildlife, and you beat me to the punch. And if you're seeing whales on a semi-regular basis, then you certainly have a life that that I kind of want to live as well. Let's give some advice for people who are on, are still you know, on the grid, if you will, David. What advice would you give somebody who's listening to your story and would like to do what you're doing?
But, well, I try to make some of my comments quick, so I'll do that one for you here. Get out now. That's the advice.
But
if you want a little bit more detail, it would be this. If you're young, you pretty much have to go to the gene pool to find your partner, work your heart out to make a nest egg of some kind. And also, you're very fortunate. When you're in the city, you're living in the biggest garbage dump going. So you can go to houses that are being torn down, buildings that are being renovated, and you can get virtually all of the building supplies you'll need. Admittedly, you will not be building a house that looks like something from Better Homes and Gardens, but you'll be able to build a very functional 1,500, 2,000 square foot house with stuff you can salvage from building sites. So there's a bit of advice for a young person. And if you're an older person and you're over the age of 60, the advice is stay there till you die. Because after 60, it's too hard. Mm-hmm. It really is, unless you're some really strong iron person. Mm-hmm. This is a very physical life, and I'm happy for it. It's made me healthier. I've lost weight. I'm stronger. I've got more energy. Everything's good, but if I had waited 1 or 2 years more than I did after 56, I don't think I could have done it.
Well, let's begin closing the show by telling people a little bit more about your books. You've written two of them, and so tell us the difference between the two and how people can learn more about them and get and actually, you know, buy them.
Well, Our Life Off the Grid is basically a story of how not to do it. It's about two people who just screw up for 5 years, stumbling and falling and slowly getting a house together. We were the biggest goofballs going. We did it, but I was covered in blood more than once. So book number one is really a bit of a comedy on how not to do it. And after that book was written, I got a lot of comments from some people saying how disappointed they were that there was no positive advice, no constructive advice. And so choosing Off the Grid is much more serious. It's to give some advice that I felt qualified to give. Please, Mike, make your audience know I am not qualified to give much good advice at all. Mm-hmm. I can tell you what not to do. I'm not very good at telling you what to do because we're still learning. The biggest joy about being here, aside from the beautiful setting, is that every day is learning, every day is interesting, every day is a lot of fun.
And how can people get the books? Just general websites, or is there a specific website they should go to?
No, Amazon sells them both. I would urge them to buy the first one and borrow the second one from the library. Second one's not as much fun as the first one.
I got you. David, we really enjoyed talking to you, and maybe we'll talk to you down the road again about some more off-grid adventures. Thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime, Mike.
Today's sponsor was MySolarBackup.com. The power grid is aging, and blackouts are becoming far more frequent. The solution is quite simple. You can get free electricity that will work even when your neighbor's power is out. They'll be grabbing their flashlights, and your lights will still be on. Learn more at MySolarBackup.com. As a reminder, you can also visit OffTheGridNews.com for the best off-grid and homesteading advice you will find anywhere. Visit our how-to section, where you can learn everything from how to build a solar food dehydrator to how to get your wood stove ready for winter. With engineer Gavin Wright, this has been Michael Faust. Please join us again next week for another edition of Off The Grid Radio.